So, yes, this has been quite an experience, but we're now live and we're on air. This is Climate Camp Radio. If you're not on the camp, hello. If you are on the camp, yo. I'm trying to think of what day today is. Today is Thursday. And what's the date today?
The 27th.
So, on tonight's show, we got a few things going on. And we're on, you probably noticed already, we're on 101.8. In stereo as well, which is brilliant. Here we are on Blackheath Common, and we've got a few people coming in tonight. We've got some Climate Camp media people who are going to talk to us. Cheers. We're going to actually start off with a legal update, and we have some people today who are on a bit of an action at with some climate roulette, I think it was. So start off the show. We've got some legal people here. Hey, guys.
Hiya.
Hi.
Here's Mike.
Hiya.
Cool. So you guys are legal observers, is that it?
Yep, that's right.
So what's the role of a legal observer like at this year's camp?
I think it's going to be very different from the last three climate camps, or indeed the climate camp in the city, though, the one-day camp. I think that in the previous years we've been very much on the defensive, particularly last year, where there was a huge amount of police outrageous behaviour, and our role on that occasion really was to document it as much as possible. On other occasions, by being there, we're trying to sort of, you know, protect people from the police, the worst outrages of the police's sort of excessive behaviour, just because they know it's being recorded. But that didn't seem to work last year. Last year, instead, by the very fact we recorded it, we were able to kind of compile all the evidence we needed to bring the legal challenges that have got the police right on the defensive, which is why they're treating us with kid gloves this year. So I think our role this year is going to be very different.
Well, I noticed that, actually, neither of you are wearing them now, but you've tried to change, you've come with a very friendly policy. You've got, like, T-shirts now. What do they say on them?
The T-shirts that we've got basically are reminding people that if they get stopped and searched by the police, they don't have to give out any personal details at all, because the police are very keen on trying to collect as many names and addresses and dates of birth and ethnicities and so on from people as possible. And last year at Climate Camp at King's North, one-fifth of the people ended up giving their personal details, and we just want to remind people that no matter what the police do, they can't actually, under any of the search powers, demand that to be collected.
So what exactly, so if I were coming onto the campsite today, now, the conspicuous by their absence, but if a police officer decided to stop me, what am I obliged to give them and what am I not?
They do have a power to search you, and they can use reasonable force if need be to carry out that search. But what they are allowed to look for is limited by the reasons they give for the search. Now, at the start of a search, they must tell you their name, they must tell you their number, they must tell you what police station they're attached to, and they must tell you what legal power they're using to search you under. Now, most of the powers they can use, they will be searching for implements that can be used to commit criminal damage or assault or those sort of offences. They do not have powers on any event, under any of their search powers, to start rifling through your wallets or your address books for your personal details, for your name, your address, your friends' names and addresses and all those sort of things. But they will try. They have been known, and certainly last year they were going well out of their way to try and find those things by all sorts of dubious practices. This year we're seeing very different behaviour. I hope it stays that way.
So actually, have we had much experience, have we had many arrests actually at the camp this year at all?
I don't think we've had any so far. The police have very much not been present, at least not at the gate. We are aware of the fact that they have set up what seems to be an alternative camp across the road from us. But they haven't really been present very much. So so far, no clashes, it seems.
The alternative camp, is that the one where all the ice cream vans were?
I think it's somewhere around there, yes.
that would make sense then. I was wondering where they were coming from. You've got some training coming on as well for people who want to try and get involved in this type of legal.
Yes, we have a training session for anyone who wants to be a legal observer. We're doing that at 4:30 at the legal tent tomorrow afternoon, and there are other training sessions later on in the week. They're all listed in the Climate Camp booklet, where you can see the schedule of all the workshops going on. There are legal observer training workshops, so if you want to be part of the take on the role of gathering evidence, recording who gets arrested, for what, and who witnessed it, because all of that information could be very useful if the police then start, particularly if they start lying about what happened to try and fit somebody up. The evidence that you gather, even as somebody who witnessed an arrest, can be very useful for their defence, or indeed for bringing claims against the police if they assault people or if they arrest people wrongfully. So there are many different reasons why the evidence that people gather, whether as legal observers or anybody else for that matter, feed it into a legal observer. Your witness evidence can be very, very useful.
And Sarah, when you did the training, what sort of stuff is involved in that?
It goes through quite a bit of theory, talking about quite a lot about the stops and searches. I trained at King's North last year, and so the stops and searches were very much one of the things that legal observers were there to observe. So talk a lot about the different search powers and what kind of things you're looking out for, and also talking about how you might try to intervene if there is a search going on that you think is illegal, and how you can judge whether you're going to be useful if you try to interrupt or not. And also kind of learning about what kind of things it is that you want to collect, what kind of evidence you want to collect if somebody gets arrested, and those sort of things, really. It's in some ways, it's a pretty basic level of just kind of becoming an observer, really, because that's what legal observers are there to be. They never pretend to be solicitors and to give out proper legal advice to people. But that's not what we're there to do. So
it must be difficult, of course, to keep a degree of separation in some of the situations.
Well, you're absolutely right. This is an issue. We are there to observe, not to participate. But on the other hand, we are unashamedly not neutral. We are here to gather evidence for the climate campers.
Yes.
We're not here to help the police in their evidence gathering. That's their job. We're unashamedly biased. The police do know that. The police have, in discussions in the run-up to the camp, they have acknowledged the role of legal observers in a way that they weren't prepared to last time. Last time they were trying to prevent us doing our job of legal observing. This time they seem to be much more accommodating of the fact that legal observers, for all that we don't have any formal legal status, we do have a legitimate role to play in a kind of in a democratic, accountable society and all those things that the police are supposed to be.
Cool. So, well, we're going to move on now, but just before you go, what is the most interesting thing you've learned about your rights from being a legal observer that you didn't know before you went into the training? Like, is there anything that you went, wow? Maybe
there isn't. That's a tricky one. I'd say in some ways it's more about the rights that we don't have that I've learned about. Or at least about the rights that are sometimes not upheld by the police at all. I think that's more what's been shocking. Yeah. That at least when I arrived at King's North last year, I assumed that they it was fine for them to search everybody under this power that, oh yeah, you might have an offensive weapon because you're going to climate camp. And then actually I found out a few days later that they really shouldn't have been doing that at all unless they had a very specific reason to suspect that somebody in particular might be attempting to do something. So I think that's probably the main thing that surprised me.
And you, Roger?
I think the most clarifying thing, perhaps not the most surprising thing, is just to be clear in that the police can only do things that you and I as ordinary citizens can't do if they have a specific legal power to do it. So it's always worth bearing this one in mind. If the police are doing something to you that you wouldn't be allowed to do to them, it's always worth asking, do they have a legal power? And if so, what it is. If you are suspicious as that they might be exceeding their powers, it's worth asking, because they might be acting unlawfully. There are actually, you know, the law gives them a lot of power, but it doesn't give them omnipotence. And every so often, this has been what has actually got them defensive, is asking questions about when they're exceeding their powers. And that question is always worth doing.
All right, cool. Well, thanks very much for coming in. I hope you don't take offence when I say we hope not to see too much of you and all the rest of it. You don't get me wrong. There's always a few years at the gate and you're a friendly bunch and all the rest of it, you know, and you do well in that regard. But of course,
if we get to spend the camp doing very ordinary things like chopping food, then that will be because the legal observing team did a very good job over the last 3 years. So I hope to be chopping food this year. That'll be very nice.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in. And off you go to the welcome plenary that's happening just down the road a little bit. And next we're going to be talking to Portia, who's from the media team.
Hiya.
And thank you so much for waiting for us through our technical difficulties. But I wanted to ask about the media response, the mainstream media response this year. It sounds like the media team has put a lot of effort into trying to put out a really positive and sort of great message. And it seems that it's catching on. It sounds like there's loads of really good press out there. Maybe you can talk to us about what's actually being said about us here.
So we have had some really great press actually this year. And I think that is due in part to a lot of people putting in time and effort and building up those links. And it's because the media team and the legal team have been able to deliver such cutting edge and useful stories to journalists. I think they know that they can come back to us and rely on us. So, of course, I think it caused a lot of excitement at the gate when this was publicly read out. We got the front page of The Guardian with a lovely shot of someone on top of a tripod and then a massive article inside, which is very sympathetic to us and really kind of showed the camp in its best light, which is, of course, what the media is meant to be doing. We also then got coverage on the BBC, who we were very pleased, showed lovely clips of locals saying how we weren't inconveniencing them at all and they would love to come down to camp, which is perfect. We had the Press Association. They put out a really great press release, which of course goes, they put out an article, which of course goes to lots of different newspapers. So that's really useful for us. I think a triumph. We've been on Newsnight, but even trickier than Newsnight, even trickier than the Today programme to actually get onto, is Newsround, which I'm not sure if everyone's heard of. It's a kind of 15-minute children's news programme that we've only been on once 3 years ago. So that was a triumph.
And what was said on Newsround then? What are the kids going to hear about?
I haven't actually seen the broadcast. Apparently, they weren't that interested in coming on the kids' one, the kids' sweep, because they thought that wouldn't be where the action is. So I'm assuming it was a pretty full-on interview or report or whatever it was. And yeah, I think that's a pretty good roundup of what we've been doing. We've been doing a bit of Sky, Radio 4. We've got LBC coming later. We had ITV.
So there's just like a constant stream of journalists coming to the site at this stage. Still a lot of people sort of getting introduced to what's going on here.
Yeah, I think, there are quieter times and there are busier times. Of course, whenever the police come anywhere near, we get some photographers coming over and taking photos. I think actually people know that the thing they want to record and the things that are interesting are the workshops that we'll be running on the weekend. And, you know, like, what's a better photo op than seeing people practicing de-locking themselves to each other? So I think we're going to get more on the weekend, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Well, in terms... I actually wanted to ask, do you find that when you're dealing with the journalists that now that... We just had Legal on and they were talking about the policing of the camp and how this year is a radically different experience from any of the previous camps.
Yeah.
And how do you feel that has tainted the attitudes of the media? You mentioned they're interested in workshops, but most journalists are into riot porn.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And you can kind of see that the photographers get a bit itchy if they realise they're not going to get that super shot of someone being battened or something.
Yeah, I know.
But then I guess it's just our job to make sure that our message comes out. And this is why 1,000 people have gathered in a windy, cold field, because we want to take action on climate change. We're not actually here because we find the tactics of the Metropolitan Police that absorbing. And so we try and get this across. And actually, I think once they do find people who are passionate, once they are able to interview people who care about the issues, it's just as interesting. Mm-hmm.
So is the mainstream media and other media outlets, for that matter, catching up on the message, because the message is to be in the city, the capital of finance. So is that actually getting across? There's a big, you know, capitalism is crisis sign over the entrance. And is there any commentary on that?
I think it's improving. And I think that's because we've done such a good job by getting police out of the picture. I know that the Newsnight bit that we featured on was a debate about the climate. And I know that when we had, for example, there was a Guardian article about the camp in general. And then if you actually look on the website at the comments that have been made, it is kind of analysis of the pros and cons of carbon trading, which is what these are the discussions that we think that people should be having. And this is the effect we want our message to have, to make sure that, like, the elephant in the room, this completely inefficient, profit driven, crazy plan of carbon trading, like, that actually needs to be scrutinized and exposed as a false solution. And we're getting people to do that. And I think that's great. Maybe they don't report the things that don't fit in with their message so much. Like, I noticed that not that much has been done that's really, really challenging the economic system. But I think that's going to be always an uphill struggle for us.
Well, yeah, I suppose with corporate media, it's a little bit of a stretch to ask.
But you're not in corporate media now, so no. It's all right.
Non-corporate.
Non-corporate.
Well, right. So, are you having any training for new media? Are you going to get new people on team?
Yeah, we're really focusing on training this year. There was some training at the Oxford National Gathering, which was a couple of weeks ago, so that's kind of a new generation of us in. And then I think we're running a workshop every day on media for activists, and that's how to work out if your action is going to be a good story, how to get the news out there, how to get your photos and images and videos out there, and also then how to kind of navigate the corporate media. And I think there's one specifically focusing on not getting ensnared in any of their traps.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool.
So, well, thanks very much for coming in. You're free to go to the welcome plenary, although you probably missed a substantial portion of it. Sorry about that. It's totally our fault. But, yeah, so.
Well, yeah, we got straight into some more livey guests.
Woo! Livey
guests. Hey, guys.
Well, we're happy to be here in livey.
Cheers for coming in. A bit later. Yeah. So, you guys like had a busy day today.
Indeed we did.
Yeah, it's been a pretty busy week, actually.
actually, yeah, I suppose.
But we thought it was really important to kick off the first day of Climate Camp with some action, some direct action. And we thought, where better to start off than at where we left off at the G20, which was on Bishopsgate outside the European Carbon Exchange.
Sure.
And so today we did an action outside there. With hanging a banner which said climate casino what did it say then?
You were behind the banner, I take it.
gambling with your planet's future, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we were all dressed up. Why were we dressed up, Becky?
We were dressed up to look like really sleazy, awful gamblers who relish in wasting our money in casinos and gambling it away, frittering it away for nothing. So we were dressed up in suits and ties and dicky bows and evening dresses and feather boas to look the part and really sort of use that as a kind of like visual indicator of like how incredibly wasteful and profit mongering the City of London carbon trading schemes are, and British bank investment into hugely damaging industrial and high emitting projects worldwide. So that was the concept behind it.
And how were you received?
Well, we were received very well. Well, the security guard was a bit miffed, and that turned out...
I think he felt a bit silly, because I spent about 2 minutes asking him where Liverpool Station was. Left was a very hard concept, and he kept at it. But, yeah, that apart from that, it was fine. Really great media coverage. There was an article on the Guardian online website that went up before we even left the action.
It's a little preemptive.
But yeah, I mean, this was there was an embedded sort of Channel 4 team who were with us sort of before, during the action, and they wanted to do like a special exclusive coverage on it, so sort of they had ownership of it, and that was, you know, something that then a lot of other press followed.
Can I ask, what were the camera crew like? Were they cool?
They were pretty good.
Yeah, they were very good, actually. They were. Sometimes you find that they really stick in your faces, but they weren't like that today at all. And I think that just goes to show that we're becoming more sophisticated at working with the media.
Speak for yourself.
And they really wanted to work with us. Like, they wanted to be just observe like the process by which like we put the action together, like and what was happening during, and the messaging that's gone out for something that is a really complicated issue, the financial system. You know, it's not as easy to grasp as like a physical symbolic target that then kind of speaks about sort of complexities behind it. Like, it's abstract to a lot of people, but like what I've read and what I've seen, they've really kind of articulately stated exactly what we wanted them to, like about carbon markets, and that got through really clearly.
So I suppose I was looking at some of the papers, and there is carbon trading in particular is getting a lot of stimulation, debate going on about that at the moment. So what other places do you think, would you like to see some action taken against in London this week? Where's next?
Well, it's like a sweet shop, isn't it?
It is, that's what I mean. Because if you look from where we are, you can see all the like towers and stuff like that. You know?
I think it's also important to remember that the government is also largely in charge of creating rules and may be influenced by some of these big buildings behind us. But I think it's pretty important that we also shine a spotlight on them, and that might be the Treasury, or it might be the Department for Business, it might be Department for Climate Change. All these guys need to be feeling the heat as well, because they're setting the rules, and unfortunately those rules aren't delivering.
I think what would be really great to see this week is like a narrative out of multiple actions that really draws attention to the fact that, you know, government and corporate business, you know, are one entity, that they work together. You know, again, like those, that's a difficult thing to highlight, but if we can articulate that, you know, how we must look at those two things as operating together, I think that would be really successful. So I think, a variation in targets, kind of governmental and corporate, would be ideal.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming in, but I would like to ask, are you going to any workshops?
Yeah, I
absolutely
hope to, but I haven't seen
absolutely
what the schedule is yet.
Oh, dude, I was going to ask what you were going to, like.
You know, we've put so much effort into this camp, and it's now looking like the camp we want it to be. So I think from tomorrow and Saturday, we'll be able to relax a little bit more and start going to
go through the
workshops and have a look at, through the program. And
I'm really excited about there. There's something really amazing that's happening this year, which is someone has organised for five representatives from Canada's First Nations, so Indigenous activists from Alberta, Canada, who are active against the tar sands over the excavation, the oil extraction from there. You know, it's the single largest industrial project in the world at the moment, and it's being driven by a lot of British oil companies. You know, Shell and BP are sort of up to their necks in it, and they're being invested in by big city banks. One of which we can see their really large tower from here. HSBC are investing a lot in that, so they're coming over and running workshops and doing talks, and it's going to be really exciting and something that there's little awareness about in the UK, despite it being so largely driven by kind of UK corporations and banks. So that's something I'd quite like to go to.
Cool.
And I just plugged it really blatantly, sorry.
Oh,
totally abused
right,
the radio.
Are you facilitating it?
No. I'm going. I'm really interested.
All right, wicked. Well, thanks very much for dropping in, guys. And
thanks for having
for today.
Us.
It was good fun.
Yeah, cool. So what are we going to go into next?
Yeah, we're going to go into a little bit of a dubstep track, because we've had a really long day. So we're going to chill out for a while. So chill out with us. And then we'll be back with some more interviews pre-recorded that we did today. Okay, so yeah, that was some dubstep to chill out to. We're going to go into an interview that I did with a bunch of people that were on the bicycle swoop, as you might or might not have known. Basically, people converged in different places around London to, like, kind of swoop in different ways to get to the site in on foot, transport, or on bikes. And so I talked to the bike group about their experience and what they did. So here it is. What happened yesterday on the bicycle swoop? So maybe introduce yourselves first.
I'm Joe Ryle.
You're Bryn.
I'm Bryn.
Tim.
Yeah.
I'm Oscar.
So you were on the bicycle swoop. Were you on the bicycle swoop as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. So how did it go? Where did you guys start? Maybe just tell us a story of how it went.
We started at Waterloo Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we started at my house. We were kind of leading the swoop slightly, and we made our way down to Waterloo Bridge. It was really nice to see a big group of people there ready to swoop.
How many?
Probably, when we got there, probably about 100, maybe.
I'd say at least 200 on the... when you look back and...
On the actual swoop, probably, yeah, almost 200.
Held back about 200.
There was a lot of people, and it kind of dragged out over the best part of a mile.
Oh, wow.
I think we definitely had the biggest swoop because of the people that came after us.
Yeah.
And bikes are popular.
Yeah, we got there, and everyone seemed really enthusiastic and ready to go, and had a little talk about Shell, because we were right next to the Shell Centre, so we had someone talk about Shell and the impact they're having on the environment and their policies and the way they go about things. And it was really nice to see that there's only, I think, two police officers there, no hassle from them in the slightest. And then we got a message to say that we should do a little tour of London for a while, and Tim very nicely led us on a tour around central
leader.
London.
Yeah, I was the leader.
Follow the Pied Piper.
No, it's just I was a courier for a long time, so I know my way around. So we just went round, and we had the microphone going, and just sort of some good sort of outreach publicity about the camp, and it was quite a spectacle. I think we looked really colourful with lots of flags and things.
And music, sound system.
Yeah, so I was handing out leaflets when we were at Waterloo Bridge, and I've never got through so many leaflets so quickly. Everyone was really interested to read up on what we were doing and why we were there.
I just think the general public bought into the concept of climate camp.
It's quite interesting. Because we were a mobile group, very mobile, you didn't really get a chance to stop and kind of talk to people so much about it. You kind of got the odd opportunity at traffic lights to kind of have a little chat to someone who'd ask what's this all about and give them a leaflet and give a quick explanation of what was going on. But I think they got the general gist of it. We had the microphone telling people to look on the website and kind of a general explanation of what we're doing, where we're going. And I think the general feeling was pretty positive. We had a few disgruntled motorists, but other than that, it was a really nice atmosphere and a really nice vibe. And I think even if people didn't quite understand what was going on, they enjoyed the spectacle and were just intrigued by what was going on. So it was good.
And how is getting up the hill? How did everyone make it up on their bikes?
I had a sound system behind mine, and it's like 60 kilograms behind your bike, so it's...
I reckon at least a quarter of us walked up the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a sound system behind mine, but we made it up.
You had a tandem, though. You had a tandem.
I had a good stoker.
You had a good stoker.
So, to ask the obvious, why are you here? Why did you come to climate camp, and what do you hope to achieve while you're here?
I think we're here to... There's multiple reasons we're here. It's a skill share. So you can come and find like-minded people to share what you know, learn what other people know. And basically, for me, it's about improving the chances of succeeding in our challenge to prevent catastrophic climate change. And in these sorts of environments, it makes it so much easier, because quite often when you're in your quite small activist community, there's limitations to what you can achieve in terms of knowledge and manpower. And so you come to a place like this, and the horizons are broadened hugely by what you can achieve, and it's a really interesting place to come and just be a part of. And also it's about not just for the activists and people that have come already and know about what's going on, it's about educating and kind of bringing people from the wider spectrum of society in and letting them know what's going on and kind of empowering them as well to take action and be a positive part of the change.
So do you have any plans to go out on your bikes and ride around and like recruit neighborhood people to come by or any idea? Because you've got your bike on site, yeah. And you know, any plans to use it for anything?
I mean, it's something we've done in the past, like for example at Drax at the first camp, just outreach, so going into, it was Selby at Drax, but going there and sort of setting up sort of bike fixing and stuff and taking various bikes with us that would engage with the public. But bike fixing is always a good one because it gets the kids involved, and so yeah, I mean that's definitely one thing we'd like to do sooner rather than later, and to explore the local neighbourhoods. And I think, you know, it's great that it is much more centrally located this year, where that we hopefully a lot more people will come and not be put off by the fact that, you know, the policing so far has not been as aggressive. So, and it's critical mass tomorrow night, yeah. So hopefully we could take a little delegation down there.
Yeah, excellent. I'm glad you're sitting here with me. I have two site people here. This is Chickpea, Descendant Island Radio at Climate Camp 2009, and I'm sitting here with
Cara
and Dan.
Nice to be here with you guys. You both are part of the site team this year. Quite a large sort of and a very important thing, because you basically provide all the architecture infrastructure that the camp exists with during the entire time. So maybe, could you talk us through what is actually on site this year for people who are listening in Radioland who can't get here and have no idea what it looks like?
Oh, crikey. There's a lot of stuff on site. And I should probably say first that this is day two now, halfway through day two, and an enormous number of structures have gone up already, and that is only because so many people sort of pulled their finger out and put things up, which is amazing. There is toilets, a welcome tent, just chip in. We're neighbourhoods that have got kitchens in them and socialising spaces, meeting spaces in them.
There's four workshop marquees and a main marquee, which is split up into workshop marquees during the day, and then in the evening becomes entertainment. So there's like seven or eight workshop spaces, central cafe, cinema, student cafe, Be the Media, kids space, radio and TV. There's basically a lot of structures and quite a lot of people on the site team, and we've all been having quite a lot of fun because this year is the first year that we've invited like everybody who's loosely involved in the climate camp to come and help put it up as well.
And the renewable energy infrastructure is up. There's two wind jennies up. There's two banks of solar panels up, and probably more to go. And there's going to be grey water systems going up soon.
Yeah, it looks like they're going around all the different kitchens. And tell us a little bit about the size of these structures that we're talking about. Like, how many toilets? How big are the marquees? Like, you know?
What I was going to say is that I think, like, to get an idea of what we're sat amongst here, we basically came to an empty field, and between yesterday midday and now, a lot of structures have been laid out, so we've sort of seen where they're going to go, but then only a few have gone up so far. I mean, there's maybe like 10 have gone up so far. Like, the main marquee is looking beautiful. It's got four large poles and flags, and then that will be raised up slowly, so we're still very much like halfway through putting things up, but it does look really,
it's a hive of activity.
And occasionally you'll get people like being asked to volunteer to come and put a new marquee up. Somebody will know how to do it, and they'll get a load of people around and explain, and they sit down, so as you walk around site you see things.
The van that we're sitting next to fires up, and there goes our shade.
So yeah, I was saying, as you walk around site, you see lots of people about to put a marquee up, or learning how to put a marquee up, or volunteering to do toilets and being sort of talked through how the toilets work and all that kind of thing. So a lot of imparting of knowledge and sharing skills. It's great.
Yeah, good stuff. Where are these marquees coming from, by the way? I mean, it just seems like they just show up every year, don't they? And then
they've been hired or borrowed from a variety of different people who do that kind of thing. I mean, the planning the site has been going on in national gatherings and in neighbourhood meetings for 6 months.
Yeah.
Then the rest of the year, the Climate Camp movement, I guess, is totally focused on doing other local campaigns and actions. And then for 6 months, we divide up into teams and we ensure that we have sort of like bought or begged or borrowed or stolen and requisite equipment to put this thing together. And then getting it all here is, that's quite a big part of your job, because like I'm coordinating toilets, but I haven't put a toilet structure up when I arrived here. I made sure they got here and that they existed, and I designed them and I made them and made estimates of how many thousand people would arrive on site, and then waved my arms around. And as soon as you pick up a heavy object around here, about 10 people come and say, what are you doing and can we help you?
Yeah, it's true. It's really good. It's really, really good.
So what are the toilets like then? Can you reassure people out there that they're actually better than Glastonbury's? I think that quote is what I keep hearing. Are they better than Glastonbury's? Glastonbury's sucks.
Well, you can hear them being hammered to place perhaps in the background. There's been some hammering behind us. I can see somebody putting together one of the poo toilets, which have been existing for a couple of years. They're really good. They're quite high. You can hear somebody hammering now. Cara can tell you about more about toilets, Toilet Queen.
When they're looked after well, the compost toilets basically pong less than chemical toilets. Because chemical toilets sort of, I don't know, they just seem to try to mask the smells by putting loads of disinfectant-y sort of perfume over the top. And then you're in this sort of quite tight little plastic box that gets really hot.
Yeah.
And then you're sat in there and you're feel really faint because you're overpowered by lack of air on top of the fact there's quite a lot of aroma. And I think when you use the compost toilets here, the fresh air kind of gets through, and when you throw sawdust onto poo that isn't being collected with wee, you don't really get smells and flies.
Yeah.
You get a light smell, but it's not overpowering.
It's definitely
it's better.
And separating the wee and the poo is the important thing, isn't it?
Very crucial. And then where the poo and the wee goes?
Yeah.
Is it going to farms or something this year?
It goes to a place where it can be stored to kind of have all the wonderful bacteria, kind of do all their wonderful processes that they do. It's going to a community farm in North London. They're going to look after it all, and then they're going to use it on, I think they're probably going to plant an orchard, actually, because they've got some new land.
So what's in store for the site team now that, how much work do you have left, percentage-wise, do you think? And how are you feeling?
There's still quite a lot to do. This was the day of setup. It's really nice to be able to walk around the site. The whole site this year is quite long. So as you come to the welcome gate, you can kind of, basically there's two lines of structures that stretch away from you, and you can kind of walk up the middle and get to everything. And then around those two lines of structures, all the neighbourhoods are positioned with their kitchens, and then the camping sort of behind that, toilets and things. And I think we're probably about five structures away from having a complete set. There's some big ones to go still, but they're laid out and ready, and there's everybody's checking that the right poles are there and everybody knows what to do. And
I think erecting the main marquee is going to be a real highlight, because it takes about 50 people, and most of them don't really need to know what they're doing, so long as somebody's got a loud hailer. And I've overheard somebody earlier saying that the geometry was all dead on, and that they were going to bring a sound system over and it was going to be the most exciting event of the list.
It looks really beautiful laid out. It's like a huge area laid out with sort of little cross-hatchings of pegs and pulled up ropes and things. Yeah. And it's been great just keeping an eye on it, watching it go out from a distance. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to have the Kaylee in there, I'm sure.
Yeah, bring everybody together. Yeah.
Anyway, so any last words for listeners out there?
I think just come down and muck in. There's job shops. There's a welcome area. And there's lots of nice grass to lie on when you're tired and vegan food to eat.
Yeah,
it's a really, really important part of things is to get involved and stuff and feel that you're involved and learn new things, share some skills, and get involved.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Nightmare. Only one man stands between hell and earth.
So I'm here with Stuart, who's just started up the speaker's corner near the entrance to the site, Head of the Cove.
It's very well, it seems to be very popular already. It's only been going for a few minutes, so yeah, it's going well.
Why did you decide to do this?
I think it's extremely important that as activists, people acquire the skill of speaking in a public situation. And also, you need to have ideas pronounced, so you know there's a lot of intelligence in this field, and it's going to go unnoticed unless people stand on a soapbox and mouth off.
Okay, and have you been to previous camps and thought this was a good idea, or is this your first year coming?
The idea didn't evolve from camps, but I think camps are especially this one, is massively important. Basically, the future of the planet could hinge on what happens at this camp, or camps like it.
Okay, and do you intend on managing the space, like making sure that people only talk for 3 minutes and making sure there's always someone speaking, or are you just going to let it be self-managed?
I'm not quite sure how it's going to develop. The 3 minutes isn't strict. The reason why I put 3 minutes there was because after 3 minutes it tends to get a bit boring, and also if there is a problem, you know, it's my soapbox and I can tell the bloke to get off the box. I can put up with anything for 3 minutes, but if there's a real problem I can get them off the box.
Okay, and
I don't anticipate a problem, but it's just a safeguard.
And on your box there it says in big writing free speech. I mean, how far do you think that go?
As long as you know, it doesn't get really out of hand and there's a possibility of violence or whatever, you can say what you want.
Alright, thanks a lot. Okay. Alright, we're here at the Bicecology space with Peter and Imogen. How's it going?
It's going very nicely, thank you. Lovely and sunny.
Are you enjoying your first full day on camp?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been fixing bikes all day. So.
Fixing bikes, many to go?
Not yet, no.
Okay, very good. So what does Bicecology have in store for us over the week?
Well, basically we've got the usual sort of thing in store. For the second year now we've got our own proper space. We've got a big white tent in the northwest neighbourhood. In there we're going to be doing cinema every night. I don't know whether we'll get it together tonight, but from tomorrow night we'll be doing cinema every night. maybe a bit in the day if the light's bad, like if it's a cloudy day. And then we've got workshops and stuff coming up as well. The first one is tomorrow, which is Friday, which is from 4:30 till 6:30 in Art Space, and that's me and a couple of other people in Bicycology talking about 12 volt electricity as a thing in itself, and then pedal power in relation to 12 volt, which is most pedal powered systems are 12 volt, and then also the sound systems that we have are all run on 12 volt, and some of them are run pedal powered as well. So we're going to be talking about all that and the pedal powered cinema that we have from 4:30 till 6:30 tomorrow, which is after your lovely workshop on DIY radio.
So this is basically anything that you'd ever want to power off a bike.
Yeah, anything you want to power. And then
I see just now that you're powering a blender off a bike.
Mm-hmm, that's different, because that's not the 12 volt. There's no electric involved in that. It's like a mechanical thing. And that's what I've been doing today, is building that, basically. Well, I delegated. I started off by bringing out what the bits I had, and then a couple of people were like, oh yeah, let's build it. And then I let them go on with it.
I'm just going to have to get some fruit, so we should have some fruit blending by this afternoon.
Yeah.
Are you not expecting quite a rush for these smoothies?
Yes, we are thinking that one blender is probably not enough. So if anyone on site knows of a good source of broken blenders, then we can sort you out with your own personal bike-powered blender, and if you allow us to make smoothies with it for the duration of the camp.
So this is going to be going all the time, every day?
Yeah, I guess so, but it's on a bring-your-own-fruit basis, basically, I think, because I don't think we're going to be able to supply it for everyone. So if you bring some stuff you want to put in a smoothie, then pedal and then you drink the smoothie.
So what else have you got?
So that's tomorrow, Friday, and I mean that's what's in the program. You can find that in the program, but we'll probably do some other stuff tomorrow as well. One thing we're thinking of doing is doing a critical mass every day from the site, at least around the local area maybe.
You're going to avoid that big hill though, yeah.
It wasn't too fun coming up it with loads of stuff, but the people who didn't have any stuff on their bikes seemed to do alright actually. So yeah, that's Friday and what we're doing, like, randomly. And Saturday at 10:30 till 11:30 in Meeting Space 2, I don't know, anyway, that tent, there's going to be a meeting about Rossport Solidarity, resisting the Corrib gas pipeline in County Mayo, and we're going to go along to that and chat. And at the end of it we'll be mentioning and hopefully talking to a few people about a bike ride, or some of us are thinking about doing. We're basically going to ride from somewhere in the UK, maybe Shell's headquarters or something, do a ride to the coast, get the ferry, and then ride across Ireland to Mayo and to Westport and do sort of outreach stuff along the way.
Being a big bike ride is quite a spectacle, especially if you've got a sound system with us, so it's really good for attracting attention to things that we're cycling to.
And on Monday is our busy day, I guess.
So from 2:30 to 4 we've got bike maintenance for kids at the kids' space. And we've got some good hand wash to wash their hands afterwards.
And some good leaflets to like explain what they'll be doing and for them to take away.
So I mean, do you reckon the kids will be any good at it?
Yeah, kids are normally pretty good at bike maintenance, actually.
Better than adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's true, actually, because bike maintenance is actually really simple. But once you're an adult, you kind of get into your head that it must be complicated, so you kind of make it more difficult than it is. Also on Monday, after that workshop, at 4:30 till 6:30 in the third meeting space, we're doing a workshop on cycle activism.
What's cycle activism?
What is cycle activism? Well, that's probably the question of the workshop, I guess. Like, what is it? What do we do that is it?
I guess it's the way we use bicycles in our activism is almost like an intermediary between us and people that we want to get a message across to. So using bikes as a method to attract people and get to know them and talk about things that we want to talk about.
Because people sometimes think that Bicycology is like a bike promotion group, which it is, but it's actually just a kind of anarchist and anti-capitalist group that talks about all sorts of things and does it through bikes. Our name suggests we're just about bikes, but...
No, but our name doesn't suggest we're just about bikes, because it's Bicycology, which comes from bicycles, ecology and...
Psychology.
Psychology, so... We address social and environmental issues through bikes, basically.
So that workshop will be about everything, basically. But if we narrowed it down a bit, I guess it'll be about, you know, we'll talk a lot about critical mass, people's experience of that, and how we've experimented with that model a bit and sort of done smaller masses and you know, masses, basically mass rides that are like critical masses up and down the country, and then how we found that even that was a bit limiting, so yeah. We introduced like stopping for a day in a place, doing activities, and we even found that that was limiting, so we did stopping for a weekend in places, and then we even found that that was limiting, so we did a week-long festival of events with hardly any riding in Lancaster last year, and then we found that quite limiting. So now we're rethinking and doing a big bike ride to Mayo, I guess. But we're constantly like trying to think of different ways of using the kind of critical mass idea and our other bike kit that we have, which is constantly improving, like how we can use it best.
It would be nice to have people to come along to the workshop who are interested in organising like a mass bike ride or something, and just getting little hints and tips, because I mean, we picked up a lot going from doing nothing like that, from going straight into the G8 bike ride, which was 50 people a day cycling from London to Scotland.
So it was a real learning, steep learning curve, that ride, and even we don't kind of really appreciate the lessons we learned. We kind of didn't write them down, really. But when you talk to people, you suddenly realise that we know loads about doing cycle tours, and we want other people to do them, and we don't think that they should always be like branded as bicycology.
And in terms of lessons learned, I mean, was that from your experience in last year's camp or the any climate camps that you're kind of bringing to this, and you're improving on what you did last time?
Yeah, this year we really had a great time at last year's climate camp, and we really appreciated having a space, and we'd broken one of our rules to have that space, which was like basically tried really hard to only move our kit around either by pedal power, by putting it in trailers and moving it, or on public transport. And for last year's camp we hired a van and stuff, which I'm still not very happy with, and we still talk about whether or not to do that at other events, but we decided it was worth it again this year, and so we basically spent a year building our kit up rather than doing so many events. So we built another sound system, and I built the cinema, and built a few more pedal generators, and just sort of tried to chill out a bit and regroup our group and think about what we're doing a bit more. And we've all got trained as mechanics as well, which helps.
Yeah, we had a real gender imbalance with the mechanics and stuff like that, so...
Too many women, was there?
Well, unfortunately the opposite, but so a lot of us went on a two-week course, and now it's nice at an event like the climate camp, there's a good spectrum of people doing mechanics. One of the reasons I wanted to get trained as a mechanic is just to pass on my skills to other people, so already this morning I've been fixing bikes, and people have been walking up to me and asking whether they could just join in and learn a bit along the way, which is a lovely thing to do.
And also much easier if you feel like you don't know that much, but you've got your head around it. Like, it's, I think I really like hearing from other people about stuff like the windmills, but they've only been doing it for 2 years, but they can do it. And that's what I was telling people about my bike cinema. You know, I didn't even know what I was doing until the Heathrow camp. I'd never even thought about electrics. And then now I've got a bike-powered sound system and cinema. And it's the same with the mechanics, really. I think it really helps if you're being taught by someone who barely knows the stuff themselves, but is really happy and confident about their level of knowledge and can just pass it on. It's really inspiring.
So, yeah, I guess if you want to meet the bicycology people, check out your handbook and go to one of the many workshops and activities that they're putting on. Any final words?
Yeah, well, the other thing is just that in our space we've got loads of leaflets and stuff.
Cool. Well, best of luck.
Watch out for the bicycology food reviews, yeah.
Yeah, best of luck, and we will be talking with Peter and Imogen throughout the week. All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah.
Yo.
We're back. And that draws the first show at Climate Camp 2009 to a close.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for
listening.
I
wanted to say we did this show entirely from the dark. Yeah. We had no light source sorted out, so we had our head torches. Quite exciting. New experience for the interviewees, I think.
Very Spanish Inquisition-y when you're wearing a head torch.
And tomorrow we're going to be doing a workshop. So if you're listening to this, come down and come to the...
What tent are we in?
We're in our own tent.
We don't have a tent. See,
No, but the workshop tent isn't a cool tent, you're saying.
Well, it's actually supposed to be in our tent, but the sort of theme we're under is DIY or die. So it's actually the coolest one when you look at all the workshops that are under that. So I'm kind of stoked to be under that, too. We are DIY, so I guess it makes sense, but yeah.
And then on tomorrow's show, we've got someone from the Interterrestrials playing some music.
Ooh.
As we know,
we've got the WAG and hopefully somebody who don't like the WAG talking about.
Yeah, because there was some little incident that happened yesterday that I think is definitely worth talking about.
I mean, it's not a personal thing. It's more of an issue of tactics.
Yeah, so how to approach social change, if you will. Yeah. Oh, and so.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. All right. Thanks for listening, and good night. We'll see you in the main market.
Yo to Neil as well.
Yo.
Just
where
to say.
Where the fuck are you?
Yeah, man. Just know, but like, send the love, dude.
Send the
We're
love.
Only up the road. Come on.
All right.